working just by asking you to say your name?
Sydney Walters Kinley.
Sydney Walters Kinley?
Yes.
And could you tell us when you were born?
In the year 1884.
1884. Goodness. Where were you born?
In a little town in Leesville, Texas.
Leesville, Texas. And what was your main occupation during your life?
Teaching.
Teaching. Did you teach at Diboll or somewhere else?
I never taught at Diboll. I taught before I came to Diboll.
Before you came to Diboll. What were you doing in Diboll?
I married Mr. Kinley in 1918, and he was employed by the Southern Pine people and lived in Diboll. And so that's how I came to go to Diboll.
Okay, let's see how that. Just continue on. Do you have any particular topic that you'd like to start with, or would you just like to start with your earliest memory when you were a child?
I have no special period. After my earliest memories was living in the little town of Leesville, and my mother was a pianist, also a teacher, and my father was a teacher, and we lived there in this little town. And finally, my dad decided that that was not a very good place to rear children, and so we moved out into the country, and we lived in the country until I couldn't tell you what year we moved to a little town of Dilworth. And by that time I was planning to teach. And I had a private school when I was 16. And from then I began teaching, and I taught in Coleman County and Upshur County and Gonzales County until I married Mr. Kinley. We were married in San Antonio in August 6, 1918. Then Mr. Kinley was also occupied in ranching, and we enjoyed going from Diboll out to the ranch on the weekends. And we had camp house out there, and Mr. Robert Manton had a camp house near us, and we enjoyed the weekends and the temples, needed people to hunt on their lands, and we spent quite a bit of time hunting. And it was deer, fish, and squirrels. And
whereabouts was the camp?
The camp was 12 miles west of Lufkin. And well, then the children were old enough to enjoy the hunting, and Mr. Minton and Ms. Minton also had children, and we all were together. And from then on, we moved from Diboll to Lufkin in 1936, and by that time, the children were grown, and they didn't care for the camp anymore. They became interested in the things in Lufkin, activities and the schools. And they completed their courses in the high schools here. Then David became a pilot for first, he was an instructor. He was in Texas University. And the government sent someone to find boys to train the soldiers of the Air Force. And so they trained David as a teacher to instruct. And he went to Coleman, and from there he instructed the boys that were flying. And then when the airfield closed and the war was over, he went to Kansas City and spent years with Trans World Airlines. And we cut just leave it off just a minute.
Leave it off. Mr. Watson Walker, did you say?
Mr. Watson Walker, in the year of 1918, when I went to Davao, was a superintendent of the Southern Pine Company. And Mr. O'Hara was over the city proper, Davao proper, I guess I should say. And then Mr. Strauss was over the timbered, over all of the timbered land, as seeing that the timber was properly cared for and properly gathered. Mm-hmm. And they floated, they had tram tracks out in the woods, and the men would go out in the woods and saw the logs and get them to the tram tracks and bring them into the mill and floated the logs into the mill from the train. And then it was taken control of by the machinery and sawed into different kinds of lumber.
When they brought it to the train, was that with oxen and mules?
No, they brought it with mules. The mules, the teams were kept out in the woods by men who lived out there and operated the trucks that the timber was loaded on, and the mules pulled it to the tram tracks.
What were those men called? Did they have a special name?
I don't know who they
did. I live on my grandfather's old farm near Woodville, Texas, and one time we found a logging mule skeleton on our land.
Yes.
Of course, it's grown up now, and we had no idea that there was timbering done there long time ago, but obviously there was, because there's a huge, huge skeleton of a mule. They say that these logging mules were enormous.
Yes.
Did you remember them as being bigger than ordinary mules?
Well, no. They were always well kept, well fed, and cared for, and they were strong, unusually strong animals.
Mm-hmm.
And in the buildings where the logs were, where the lumber was placed, mules were kept inside of those buildings to carry the loads of lumber to different places. And those mules became blind because it was so dark in the buildings where they had to stay.
I had never heard that. My goodness. So they stayed in there full time. They didn't take them outside in the sun.
They just took them out to feed them out for the...
Just to feed them. And so what was the name of the job that your husband did? Did you say it was
timber and land purchasing?
Timber and land purchasing.
Yes.
And did he do that his whole working career?
Before what?
Did he do that his whole working career?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, after he was promoted to it.
I see.
And in the beginning, he just worked out
in the
woods.
Did the women visit out in the lumbering camps much?
The women visited a great deal in the morning, and we had the whistles to get up at 6 o'clock and prepare the lunches and get the men off to work. And then the women would clean their houses, and then they would get out and visit, and they did a great deal of this. And so the superintendent decided to have an 11 o'clock whistle to tell the women to go home and cook dinner.
That's great.
And then we had a 12 o'clock, another whistle at 12. And then at 6, we had another whistle for everybody to go home. But the men who worked in the office went back at night and oftentimes worked till 10 o'clock. That was very pleasing to the family. They didn't get to be with the family very much.
This was just the office workers?
Yes.
Wonder why they had to work such long hours.
I don't know. I used to think they were talking.
Probably.
Visiting as much.
You think the wives needed another whistle then to call them home, huh?
That's right.
Well, I'm impressed with this whistle business. I didn't know that the Southern Pine Lumber Company had everybody's life so organized. That sounds terrific to me.
Yes, that's what they did.
Was that the one, the 11 o'clock one that they refer to as the cornbread whistle? Something to go put the cornbread on?
That was it.
Cornbread whistle. Well, when you were going to school as a young person, did you have an idea that you were going to be a teacher and that was why you were going to school? What did you expect from your education?
Well, I hoped when I was early in my life, I began to think that, of course, since my mother and my dad were teachers, I could teach. So when I grew up, I taught 2 years, and then I went to Huntsville and finally made my degree, and I met Mr. Kinley there. And when he was through with Huntsville, he was employed by the temples. And so he never knew anything like but the temples and their business. Mm-hmm. And I used to say that he was married to the Southern Pine.
Strong words there. Can you tell us about a typical day? Now, you've told us about the various whistles. What else would be involved in your day and in your husband's day?
I wonder if I should say something about the hotel.
Sure.
The hotel was kept by Mrs. Estes, and the men who were not married and the men, the office, the men in the office that who were single ate at the hotel, and it was a good hotel with plenty of nourishing food, well served, and the rooms in the hotel were always clean, and the place was neat, and there was never any confusion or any noise, unusual noises. And Miss Estes was a wonderful hotel lady.
Was that the name of the hotel, Estes?
I really don't know whether we called it anything but the hotel.
The hotel. So she was really a kind of a boarding house keeper because she served meals too.
That's right. She served meals, just splendid meals.
How many men would you say would stay there at one time?
Well, I would say from 10 to 12.
10 to 12. Well, that's a nice size for a boarding house. Can you tell us anything about church and social events?
We had two churches, the Methodists, which was in the southern part of town, and the Baptist was in the northern part of town. And we had preachers come in from different places, and we had services every Sunday, Sunday school, every Sunday morning, prayer meeting every Wednesday night. And there was still a good feeling among the church members.
The impression that I get of this Dybald community is just one of wonderful harmony, partly promoted by the company and partly the goodwill of the people who were living there. Is that the general impression you had of the community?
Yes, it was a very peaceable little town. Seldom ever had really trouble. We had the Justice of the Peace, but he didn't have very much to do.
Not too much to do.
You remember his name?
Let's see. The children of the town had no place to go, and there was no swimming pool, no playgrounds, no amusement for them. And in about 34, they opened up a picture show. That was the only amusement they had for the children. And they used to, the main trouble they had was with the little children. They'd say when they were 6 or 8 years old, they would begin to have wrestling matches.
Wrestling matches.
Yeah, they began. Oh.
For lack of something else to do, huh?
Yes, nothing else to do, so it's just really boring to them.
That's about the way it is in Woodville now. Yeah. How about any special home recipes or processes that you remember from those days? Did you put up jelly and so forth?
We put up Mayhaw jelly, and the town didn't seem to raise too many gardens.
Didn't seem to raise too many gardens.
No, the people there didn't raise them.
I wonder why.
I don't know why, but we didn't have one either. Mm-hmm.
What did you mostly eat most of the time?
Well, we usually had meat and two vegetables and a dessert, and sometimes a salad with it. And we had vegetable things brought. We had a good grocery store, and I suppose the vegetables came out of Houston because we used to have plenty of fresh vegetables. Mm. And
brought in by road on it.
Yes, and we had a man from looking at around the dairy down there and built the milk.
So there was one dairy for the that supplied Dyball.
Well, yeah, that's the only one I know of, but there were people who lived in the country that brought milk in to sell too.
Uh-huh. Did they sell it door to door, or did they have regular customers?
They had regular customers.
Okay. How did they keep it cold when they brought it in from the country?
That's just what I wonder.
You wonder.
I remember the first, well, we had an ice factory there, and we had ice. Do you know what an old-fashioned ice box is?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we had those. That's the way we kept it cool.
Uh-huh.
Until the electric refrigerators came in, then.
Can you remember about what year you switched over from ice boxes to refrigerators?
Well, let me see.
Because that makes a big difference in your life.
Okay. It must have been about 32.
32. Uh-huh.
And we had the electric refrigerators. We personally did. I don't know whether, of course, the cities had them before that time, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. How did you get your meat? What kind of meat, too?
Well, we had a good market. I don't know just where the meat came from, but we found plenty of good meat at the markets, and also cheese and butter and just practically anything that the markets keep today in the way of meats. And we had good food.
Well, you know, the thing I'm impressed with is that these years that you're describing were very hard depression years in a lot of the rest of the country. Maybe Dyball wasn't so hard hit.
We had the depression come on us too. Of course, it didn't last always. That was when Roosevelt, he kind of broke the depression because he closed all the banks and all the business all over the United States for 3 days, and that changed the course of events, and the business came back to life. But before that, we really had a depression, and I'm afraid that quite a number of people didn't really have what they really should have had for their welfare.
Even in Dyball.
Even in Dyball.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of President Hoover?
I thought it was good that somebody could wake us up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, now my husband had a good salary, and they told him to live on $150 a month. That's all we were going to have. There were five of us, and we had a maid a yard man. And so Mr. Kinley came home, and he said, "Now, I don't guess you won't put this in. I just thought I'd tell you about it."
Becky Bailey told me that Mr. Thompson had told her that he thought the company might have given you one of your milk cows. Is that true?
No.
No.
That's not true. No, Mr. Kinley, no. The milk cow, and she went, honey, bought it. She was in Jersey, the first one they had. And she was so poor, she just couldn't hardly walk. So we fed her and got her in good condition, and she gave her the nicest, richest milk. That was the first cow we had, and eventually we had two because the family was getting too big for one.
Mm-hmm. I have another question to ask you. It may be unfair to ask questions about that I've heard from somebody else.
No, I
that
don't
you
mind.
Know about, you know, but Mr. Thompson told Becky, who told me, that you might possibly know a story about a still.
About what?
About a still.
S-I-K-C?
S-T-I-L-L.
still.
Yeah.
Oh,
during Prohibition?
Yes.
Do you know a story?
I do. There was a still where they made whiskey out across the creek about a quarter of a mile from the main part of town, and every weekend they made they made whiskey, and they had gotten a light from some airport.
Oh.
And when they got this whiskey ready to sail, they turned that light on, and the people and I all knew that there was whiskey there, and they could go and get what they wanted.
Well, how was it that the prohibitionist law didn't come down on them every time they saw the revolving light?
Oh, they had the sheriff that lived up here, and he came to Dieball in pretension of correcting the thing. And he'd walk up and down the railroad track when he came so everybody could see him, and then he'd go home.
Oh,
he didn't. He didn't want to get mixed up with that.
How people got along. Oh, that's great. That's a great story. Well, let's see. What else do we need? Can you tell us about differences between back then and now that you see? You think times were better when Dieball was a small company town versus how it is there now?
Oh, no. Dieball in 1918 and for the next 15 years it was not very good. And after Mr. Walker died, and then Mr. O'Hara and Mr. Strauss were the managers, one of the Southern Pine proper business, and the other of the timber and land work. Well, then after Mr. Walker died, then Arthur Temple, First Henry Temple, I believe it was, came in, and he was the manager, and it didn't do well at all. And finally he died, and they called Arthur Temple and told him that they were, and he was very young, and they told him they were considering making him the superintendent of the mills if he would promise them certain things he would not do. And so he was just very proud to adjust every way, and he became a superintendent of the mills. And then he and his mother surveyed the town, and she was a great help to him. And
they surveyed the town, did you say?
What I mean is they went all over
the
town.
They looked it over.
Looked it over, okay. That's correct, thank you. And
what you said was correct too, but I just wanted to make sure you weren't using surveyed in a stronger sense.
I like to be corrected. Then she said, now, the poor people here are living in old gray-colored houses, and the most progressive ones are living in white-painted houses. Said there should not be that difference, and we will paint all the houses white. And said the poor people, and very few of the people, have indoor bathrooms. Said we will destroy all of these old pit tights and put a bathroom in every house in town. And they did.
Isn't that amazing? How long did it take them to accomplish that?
I would say about 9 months or a year.
That's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Well, Dieball wasn't too large, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's so pleasing to go to Dieball and see the way that the people are living there, and beautiful homes out in the woods.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. gives a marvelous impression.
Yes, you have churches. You have churches for the colored people. They must have had a church too. I didn't know about that. They must have had that church. And the town is clean. You don't see trash blowing all around it. And the streets are passable. I don't know, it just looks like a progressive town.
It does. It looks quite different from a lot of other towns in East Texas, I must say.
Yes. And there are so many homes and so much done for the aged. And I suppose for the children, and I think it's